The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have with me, David Sears, and my awesome co-host,
Brandon Triola. Sorry, I totally messed that up.
That's all right. You want to restore?
You were leading me in. You were staring at me. You had this little eye thing going. You're like, your part's coming. And then I just flubbed it like Alabama versus Vanderbilt.
All right. We'll keep it in then, since we're going to be topical with our references. This week.
Very topical.
We had our fun conversation 2 weeks ago, wrapped up our conversation about Christianity today and where it has fallen from and why the ex-evangelical movement has grown. Today, we're going to take on an even easier conversation, gun control and the gun debate.
Finally, something that is not controversial at all.
It's difficult to discuss. Because we can't even agree on what an assault weapon is for the assault weapons ban. Some research from this, and it's interesting to look at how there are 10 states with assault weapon bans and 10 states with sales of high capacity magazines banned. Yet they each have different definitions of what an assault weapon is. And they don't really know how to agree on what it is. For instance, California bans all AK series, including but not limited to the models they identified in there, and then explained the term series as includes all other models that are only variations with minor differences or those models listed in subdivisions, regardless of the manufacturer. So, they try to define a semi-automatic weapon as a centerfire rifle that has capacity to accept a detachable magazine. But when you go to Connecticut, they say that any of the following specified semi-automatic centerfire rifles or copies or duplicates thereof with the capability of such rifles that were in production prior to or on April 4th, 2013. This Connecticut put in the assault rifle ban after Sandy Hook. This is when they passed it. And it's weird because while they list it, they each define the assault ban as something different. So I think to get common ground on, first we'd have to define what an assault weapon is. I know in 1994, President Clinton passed the assault weapon ban, and it didn't want to ban all the semi-automatics, but it wanted to ban some, and it was just very difficult for everyone to nail down what is a semi-automatic. What is an assault weapon? We all know what a semi-automatic is.
Yeah, and if I stand corrected, the mass shootings, gun deaths with those style weapons during that ban went down.
It did. And that was the crazy thing. They couldn't agree on what it was, and there were a ton of loopholes for different weapons, but they actually were able to decrease mass shootings in that whole period. So their mass shootings were down, but they still had assault weapons per se, and it was not renewed by President George W. Bush in 2004, which was a campaign issue that Kerry kind of got away from because he was focused more on the war in Iraq. But it's very weird to me that we were able to come together in 1994 under Clinton, who was pretty divisive between the Republicans. But then 10 years later, when Republicans are in control in 2004, they just let it expire. It just makes no sense. It was working. I understand that the NRA lobby had grown in power from 94 to 2004. But if something's working, why would you repeal it?
Well, I mean, I think this goes back to, and again, these style weapons from everything that I've read about them, because I'm not a gun owner. I don't know. What I know through guns is through reading about guns. And, you know, as I'm trying to explore, where do I fall on gun control? And to me, it seems very, very obvious that the AR-15 needs to be banned. Mm-hmm. I've had people tell me that they use this for hunting, but it was not designed for hunting. It is designed to take out multiple targets, to take multiple targets out very quickly. As far as I'm concerned, that's a weapon of warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, I mean, we don't need it. Now, again, like I said, I think this gets part of the problem is, I mean, even when you're talking about the Second Amendment and you're talking about right to bear arms in order to maintain a well-regulated militia.
Yeah.
And again, and people don't want to talk about it, but it's connected to a world that is 100% dependent on slavery in terms of the economy, in terms of having a functional culture, what white people are deeming as a functional culture. And if you really dive into this amendment, you learn that a lot of the southern states are fighting for this because they want to have a well-maintained militia in case of slave uprisings.
Yeah, and so it's also they didn't really have guns for self-defense purposes back then. They were mainly just used for hunting and war. Like, you didn't just have a gun that had a clip. You had to put the gunpowder in, then put the bullet in the coating, more gunpowder, then light the flint and shoot or click the flint to get the fire off. So their version of guns were completely different. And it wasn't until the Civil War when rifling and cartridges are starting to be introduced that you really got into some of these more modern style guns, the six shooter, the rifle that you could put several bullets in. And it's a gun issue, and it's one of those laws that the forefathers didn't foresee us having semi-automatic guns that you could take to a irreputable place and get it made automatic. So it's a law that the Constitution needs to address, but there's so much divide between the two parties. They won't do a bipartisan effort to actually do something about it.
It reminds me of what you're talking about. Reminds me of that commercial. I don't know if you ever saw it. It was a commercial for having greater gun restrictions, gun regulations, where the guy goes into like a bank or something. And he's supposed to be like a mass shooter, but he has a revolutionary style rifle, mm-hmm. and so he does a thing where he fires off one shot, and everyone runs around and gets cover. And it takes him like, 5 minutes to, do the plug. He's doing the plug, pouring the powder in. And so they're showing it real time what it would take someone, to do for someone to commit a mass shooting with this type of weapon. And it's hysterical because the guy can fire off like one round a minute. And the joke of the commercial is it's dark humor, obviously. But everyone is able to run and hide. And he gets the gun loaded. And he looks around and he can't find anyone because they're all gone.
And It is true that the guns back in the Revolutionary War and the Constitution period are very different from today. I also understand the people that want to have those guns in the event something does happen where the government does turn.
But is that really, how relevant is that?
See, I don't know. My mother, who is a very sane woman, is petrified that no matter who wins this upcoming 2024 election, one side will not accept it and we'll have people run to the streets and start shooting.
I know which side will accept it. I mean, let's be real. We know which side's going to accept loss if they face it.
See, I can disagree with you. I can show you a video from 2016 where we have so many people saying this was not a legitimate election.
Dude, come on. Hillary said that for a couple of hours and then it was over. It was not like 2 months drawn out process, lawsuits turned down in 66 courts saying that there was, the lawsuit. I cannot even buy realistically the comparison from 2016, the way Hillary reacted to 2020.
But it wasn't just Hillary. It was other Democrats that were saying that. And the Russian collusion lie went on until it was disproven by the Mueller report. So, I mean, were they as vitriolic with their rhetoric? No. They did not go after the courts.
It's apples. I mean, if you go back to that dossier and you look at it, I mean, and the Mueller report said it wasn't reliable. It never said it there wasn't stuff in there that couldn't be true. Said it just basically logistically was not a reliable document. Shouldn't be used. I'll give anyone that, you know, that's fine. But even with that dossier, to try to say that the levels of the voices that were coming out saying the elections are not legitimate. I mean, it's just night and day when you look at the people in the Hillary camp versus the people in the Trump camp. And I think that's what kind of the thing that kind of ticks me off is this false equivalency, like this idea, like, you know, I keep seeing people put up on Facebook all the time, you know, these memes lately because it's political season. I see them every 4 years. There's the people that play the middle of the road. And I like these people, but God, I sound like Trump. I like these people.
I like the Bickley. They're great. The Bickley people. They're great people. The best people.
The best people in the middle of the road are the middle people. But yeah, so it's when they say like, it's not, don't lose friends over politics, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the thing that pisses off those of us that I feel that are like me, that are sane people and know that, yes, normally it's not, it's, if it was Mitt Romney and Barack Obama running or John McCain and Obama running, yeah, don't lose friends over politics. We can argue over that. But to sit there and say that in the age of Trumpism, that it's the same thing, that it's just two sides of a different coin, I don't buy that at all.
No, like, I agree with you. I think it's one bad side and one really bad side. I don't like either side of the coin.
I'm totally fine with that analogy. Yeah. A bad side and a really, really bad side.
So, and again, that's why I've said it before. I'm not voting for president. I'll vote for all the other offices. But I think most of them are unopposed here in Alabama because it's so Republican. But I'm not voting for either Kamala or Trump as president. I don't like either one of them. I wish the Libertarians had a decent candidate that wasn't a nut job. One day. We can all dream, can't we? I mean, Vanderbilt
beats need to set a quota. They just need to set a quota. Like, how many dead carcasses have you hauled in your vehicle in the last 10 years? And if it's more than zero, then you can't be a Libertarian candidate. And
especially if it's a bear. You just dump it in the middle of Central Park.
I actually dug up that story and read it. It was hysterical. The times, like, no one had any idea. They're like, who the hell dumped a bear in Central Park? And then to come to find out, that's Kennedy. It was JFK's nephew.
But I think part of the problem we have, getting back to the gun debate, is that the Constitution defined guns in one era. That's part of what we're seeing with social media regulation right now, is the free speech debate. Is social media really the press? Is social media supposed to be regulated? I mean, there's stuff in there that we're not quite sure of, because the Constitution, which is supposed to evolve, even though the process for a new amendment is very difficult, hasn't really evolved with the times, unfortunately. And
it reminds me of that Joe Rogan skit. I don't know if it was like some of his stand-up he did. And again, like I said, anytime I listen to Joe Rogan, it's always like one or two things. I'd be like, yep, he's on. And the rest of it, I'm like, no, there's some alpha male toxic stuff going on. I can't listen to the rest of it. But like when he talks about, like, you know, he's like, why do we have a president? He's like, it's a popularity contest. We literally every 4 years have this popularity contest for someone who's going to have a group of people behind them kind of helping make the decisions anyway. You know, it's really like, it's like a group of people. It's not just one person. And like, I mean, that just drives me nuts that you think about, it's like, you just have this one person. And then you talk about like, the forefather showing up, like Thomas Jefferson being like, whoa, 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 whoa. You guys didn't write anything new. You guys have been operating with the same document for the past 200 and something years. You guys didn't write anything new. You're saying this is the standard here.
The last new amendment was after the Vietnam War, when we lowered the voting age to 18. I think that's the last amendment. I want to say that's in the 60s. That was the last amendment we actually agreed on.
I guess my question is, and this is just, like I said, I've never owned a gun in my entire life. The only guns I've ever shot have been a prop gun on a set, on a stage or a movie set. But I've never even shot a real gun before. Yeah, maybe I've thought about it from time to time, but like I've never had like this real urge to put a gun in my hand and fire it. And now again, that comes from my family, my parents. I mean, two conservative people grew up conservative evangelical in Alabama. And my dad was just, my dad worked in the ER for a while and they were nurses. So they saw gun injuries all the time. And that was kind of like, you know, I think my dad had wanted to get one at one point. My mom was like, no, I don't want it in the house. I'm just too scared that something bad's going to happen.
They were going
off of statistics that statistically you're more likely to shoot yourself by accident than you are to stop someone in a home invasion. So I guess it's like those types of things, those types of logic that made me go, for the most part, like, why do you even need a gun? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you want to go hunt, that's fine. Get the hunting rifles. That's fine. Get a shotgun, whatever type of guns you need for hunting. But even like the home invasion stuff, the idea that like, and again, I think we get a lot of this, especially from the action movies of the 80s, that then, because I'm one of those believers that like media just infiltrates us to our core and we don't even know unless we like sit down and just start peeling back some layers. But like, I think it goes a lot of back to those Arnold Schwarzenegger's Stallone movies of the 80s where it's like, get as many guns on camera as you can, fire those guns. Let's get guns that you can't normally use. You get a Predator. They had that with the Gatling gun or whatever.
Yeah.
Mowing stuff down because that gets testosterone running. That gets adrenaline running and you know, the 80s heterosexual male. But I think it's this false like romanticization of the American hero, the good guy with the gun that makes people think like, oh, if someone breaks into my house, I'm going to have a gun to protect myself. When statistically, like, you know, by the time a person sneaks into your house and gets a gun, you're not even going to have time to get your gun out of your safety locker and stuff like
that. Well, I understand the gun aspect. My parents had guns. They never taught me gun safety. I never was curious about it. I've never been an outdoor person that wanted to go hunting. I hate the outdoors. The only time I want to be outdoors is for a concert or for a sporting event.
An outdoors gun.
I hate the outdoors.
Really?
I'd rather be in a city.
Interesting. I would have totally pegged you for like a camping guy.
Oh no, I hate camping. I hate camping.
Want to get out in the wilderness?
No, I don't want to be in the wilderness. I want to be in a city. I want to have amenities.
Who loves backpacking?
No, 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 no. I mean, but I've just never really been curious about a gun. My wife is a very small woman. She works in a dangerous line of work, being a domestic violence shelter director, because they do worry sometimes that an abuser will find the shelter and try to be violent. My mother-in-law carried a gun when she was a director, but Lila was like, I'm so small, they'll probably wrestle the gun for me and shoot me with it. So she doesn't carry it. She'll carry a hammer. She has a hammer in her car to smack somebody in the head with or in the arm, because that'll definitely do some damage. And you don't have to have a license to have a hammer, but no. I think that I've just never been curious about guns. I mean, even when I worked for Talk and we had all sorts of Hoover Tactical Firearms did all sorts of stuff. They invited me out to do some shooting. I was like, nah, I'm good. You know, I just never,
I would do that. I would think that would be a great stress reliever, firing off a gun at a shooting range, which I think when I think about like the most people that want like, you know, some sort of gun control, those are the kind of type of people I think about. Someone that's like, you know, I don't necessarily want one in my house, or maybe I do, you know, but nothing big, just a handgun, nothing like an AR-15 or anything that requires a bump stock or anything like that. But, you know, I had a rough day at work and I want to go, you know, fire off some rounds.
See, I'd rather go to I'm different. I would go to the gym and work off my stress that way. That's my different, or eat my feelings as my therapist is trying to stop me doing. You know, that's how I would blow off stress. But I understand some people like to go hunting and shooting and killing a deer and skinning the buck and having all that deer meat. I understand that. But I think we could look at an approach that Germany does, where the guns are kept at the hunting club and there's someone there basically 24 hours a day with the gun, so no one can just go in there and get them when they want. They have to say, hey, I want my gun. So they go get them out of the locker for them and give them the gun. They have to bring it back. So I think that's an approach we could look at. But because the NRA is so ingrained in our way with shootings and gun control. Yeah. I mean, when you look at when you look at the NRA, it was basically not that big a deal until about the 1960s. And what was happening in the 60s? The civil rights movement. And even Reagan, the great emancipator, when he was governor of California, banned the right to open carry because Black Panthers were open carrying in California. And the state lawmakers, gun laws
changed when people of color got access to these guns.
Yeah. So,
which is why I'm so weary about the Second Amendment in the first place, and the fact that it's completely tied to the South wanting to enforce, have some sort of method to take down slave rebellions.
Mm-hmm. And it's I think we need a national gun law that needs to be recognized, because I remember during the gay marriage debate, when Massachusetts legalized gay marriage, they used the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution to say that they should recognize a gay marriage in Massachusetts and Alabama. But I was like, why not a concealed carry permit? How come the concealed carry permit doesn't get recognized from Alabama and Massachusetts? And there was an instance where a Florida woman was driving through New Jersey and she had a concealed carry permit for her abusive husband, but she was in New Jersey and the gun she had was illegal in New Jersey, and she was sentenced to 20 years of prison. So it was, what was her name? I can't remember her name off the top. I'll have to find that article, but I mean, it's just, we need a national gun laws that everyone follows. And I know that that's difficult, but I think that could be done. We could all agree a good compromise will leave everyone a little disappointed, but I think it would be much easier if we had laws in Alabama that are the same as New York and the same as Texas. I mean, if you look at just the simple marriage law now, you know, every marriage between a man and a woman, man and a man, woman and a woman, they and a them, all of those are now recognized all 50 states. Let's do some type of program where we can get concealed carry permits, make it difficult, but make it where it's a national standard to get a concealed carry permit.
Yeah. I mean, I think you would. Yeah. I'm trying to sort through my liberal alarms, see which ones are going off. No, I mean, I don't think I'd have an issue with that. I mean, and again, like I said, this is the difference between being someone that has really hardcore beliefs, but also realizing we live in a democratic republic, however the semantics you want to play out, where we do have to follow laws that we don't necessarily want to do, because they're established. So, you know, when I the comparison though, with marriage licenses, a gay couple moving into a new state, when they're married, is not going to nullify every other marriage.
It will not
in the state.
It will not.
So, I mean, I think when you're talking about marriage versus something that can take a person's life.
Okay. A driver's license. I can go to New York and rent a car in New York with my Alabama driver's license. And that is different, you know, because each driver's license in each state, you have to go through different methods. I know in Alabama, they recently adapted a graduated driver's license for teens.
Well, you can drive in other states, but still in the city, in New York City, you can't turn right on red.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, want to have a gun in every state, that's fine. The idea of conceal and carry, I guess the philosophical questions come to mind is one, why the need to do that? I mean, what is the hope that you're going to be a good guy with a gun? I mean, that you're just constantly worried someone's going to pull a gun on you and shoot you. I mean, what line of business are you? I mean, and again, like I said, we can play these games because someone will go, oh, well, they had a gun on them, they could have protected themselves. And then someone will go, oh, no, it's because they had the gun on them. The other person was able to get the gun and then shoot them and the person's best friend. And it's just like it's that thing when politicians try to go, you know, when a Katie Britt or someone sits around a kitchen table and goes, oh, it's your fault, Mr. Biden, that this undocumented person got across the border and killed the person, killed this, you know, citizen. And the case that she makes is, well, if we had stronger laws, then this wouldn't have happened. Well, I mean, well, now you're playing God.
Yeah, because you cannot regulate every situation. And my wife and I had this conversation. We'll definitely do our show on conversations nobody wants to talk about. Good night. I can't even get the show name right. Anyway, we were talking about abortion, and I would say I'm okay, but I think this scenario. She's like, you cannot regulate every scenario. It is impossible, because just when you think you've got every scenario, there will be another scenario that you hadn't thought of that shows in there. So what the best you can do is a broad generalization. And then under that broad generalization or that broad law, you try to make sure everything's followed. Now, do I think we should codify the right to abortion? Yes. Do I hate abortion? 100%. 100%. But I realize that there are people that need that option. Like the people that had the ectopic pregnancy, the woman whose placenta partially came out her cervix and it killed the baby. So she had a dead baby inside her that was slowly causing her to go into septic shock. She couldn't get the dead baby removed from her until she was in sepsis. And that caused big complications, because had she been able to just go ahead and get the baby out of her, she wouldn't have had to go into sepsis. But because the way the laws are written, I want to say it was Texas, this woman almost died. So I think we should codify something that goes statewide, that goes nationally, that makes everything possible that states can't overturn. I know part of that will be dealing with the Supreme Court. But I do think we do need some broad laws nationally that everyone can follow, and we can fight over in the courts all we want, but until they're fought or until it's decided, we should do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so what, well, again, this is going back to conceal and carry or having a permit to wear it on the hip. Again, the question I have with that is,
it may be an adult safety blanket, you know. They feel comfortable with it.
It's an adult safety blanket, and we can't, you know, you can't tell someone what's going to make them feel safe, whether they need to lock the door, unlock the door at night. But haven't we already lived through a time period where these guys carry guns on their hips and it settled things by just going out to the street and then shooting each other? And they were like, hey, we need to have some gun laws in here. I mean, Dodge City, Tombstone. I mean, didn't we have these?
But remember that we're seeing, for most part, the media version of the Wild Wild West, which was very different from the original.
But Dodge City was a pretty, pretty violent place, and their gun laws were like basically wear it on your hip. You got a problem with someone, go deal with it in the streets. Mm-hmm. And then, it's sensationalized in the media and the movies and all that. But there's a reason why we saw civilized society happening, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we said, hey, it's beneficial for society if we don't all carry guns around our hips all the time, because humans are volatile. Humans can have an off day. I mean, are any of us going to say that I know myself so well that there's absolutely 100% no situation that will ever happen in my life that won't make me go, ooh, I could. I mean, there are times when I'm like, I'd be riding my bike down the street and someone do something or say something, you know, like I'm in a bike lane, you know, in Brooklyn, and someone's car almost swipes me, or they don't look and then they're turning. I'm like, oh man. And this person will act like they're really big. They're like, man, no, it's your fault. And they're screaming at me. And in my head go, man, if I pulled out a gun and just flashed it, this dude would just drive off right now.
They could pull their gun and shoot you, you know, they felt threatened.
Well, if that's the case, like if I was going to wave my wand magically and say like, hey, this is Brandon Creek, it's States and how gun law should be. Shotguns, fine. No AR-15s. When we talk about military style rap, I'm talking anything that can be transformed and made into any type of automatic or semi-automatic weapon. Mm-hmm. And if it can be, we need to start getting rid of. This is why, you know, I'm totally fine with getting rid of bump stocks or any simple thing that you can, you know, attach it to an AR-15 to make it more accurate or make it fire more rounds or anything like that. I mean, just common sense stuff like that. You want to keep it in your home, that's fine. And then like certain type of guns, you just can't own. You want to fire them? We'll specially license them to sporting places that you can go to a gun range and fire 15 different types of guns that you want to run. You can buy them, you know, non-functioning off the internet if they're antique or something like that. But it's just like,
well, we
it's just
we,
like you said, there's got to be some.
We do have a process in place where you have to have special license from the ATF to own certain types of guns, and you have to go through so many background checks and such a very extensive process, because you can legally own an M16, but you have to go through such a huge long process to do it. It's very difficult. So a lot of people don't go through it. And most of the time, the people that own the M16s are collectors. They're not actual people that are just going to like go out and shoot people.
And that's what we're saying. You were saying this earlier, like, we're all different people. Everyone's different. We all have different, you know, levels of morality and what we think it should be. I know what I should, like I said, for me personally, I mean, like I said, I'm not even a Christian anymore. I always go back to the verse where Jesus says, those who live by the sword are those who die by the sword. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, like, anything that's created to destroy man in some way or take man's life, I personally just want to see less of in the world. That's just me. But just like you said, I mean, we're going to have some compromise in this. So I would see, like, the more liberal side or the Democratic side going, okay, you can have the M16, but you got to go through this step, this step, this step, this step. You can have an AR-15, but you got to go through this step, this step, this step, this step, and this step. But again, we're not seeing it right now. We're seeing basically every mass murder that's happening is with the gun of choice is the AR-15. So to me, it's like, let's start there. You know, and anytime, and it goes back to the same thing when people talk about like gun violence in the city, like here in New York or in Chicago. Well, when you trace back the guns that are taken from these crime scenes and these situations where gun violence happen, it's usually an illegally obtained gun that comes from a county outside of Chicago or outside of New York, or even a lot of them actually are trafficked from down south.
A lot of Iowa and Indiana have a lot of guns coming in to Illinois the way they do it, and I think we have to go through training to. I mean. Sure, some states are more extensive than other, but you have to go through a certain training period to learn to drive a car. You have a driver's permit before you get your driver's license. I know that a lot of people are not wanting to have a gun license per se to own a gun, but I think that there's something could be said there. You know, if we have a federal national license, that
so what would it look like on your end if you were if okay, you're President David, mm-hmm. or you're everyone, you're Congress, you're all of them. What would gun legislation look like?
Number one, I think you would have to go through training, extensive training, to be able to own a handgun. Because most of the violence in America is inner city, urban areas with handgun violence. I think 60%. 60% of suicides now are with a handgun.
Did I tell you that happened to me like 2 weeks ago when I was downtown?
What?
Someone by my school, someone two blocks away, because we're near the courthouse downtown Brooklyn, and someone was mad at someone that was showing up for court, brought a gun, and started firing off like five or six rounds. It's like a block and a half away from my school.
Wow.
I looked out the window because it happened right outside of my classroom. I didn't see the person because it was a block away, but I saw all these people just like running down the sidewalk. And I was just like, and the police showed up in like literally 15 minutes, like, it was, you know, because the police are right there downtown and everything blocked off, cleaned up and done in 25 minutes. Like, it was no big deal.
Well, I think that that's something we have to look at because as, who is it? Philando Castile was a legal gun owning man. No, that was the Philando Castile I can't remember. Yeah. Philando Castile had a gun in his car. He was pulled over. He was telling the officer, hey, I have a gun. I'm just showing you the gun. I'm getting the gun out so you can see it. I'm not going to shoot you. And then the officer panicked and shot him, and he ended up dying because the officer was panicking. And
yeah,
it's one of those things where the NRA took forever to respond, mainly because Philando a black man was legally owned the gun, legally following the rules, and he ended up losing his life over it. I don't think that's right. I think we look at the way most laws are written, and most laws are written towards white suburban areas, you know, because so many of the three strikes you're out rules involving guns don't really take into account people getting these when they're 16, you know? So yeah. Sometimes they'll do stupid gun crimes when they're 16, and then that counts as one of their strikes, even though they're a child. And I know people are like, well, he's a 16-year-old with a handgun. He's not a child. No, he's still a child. He's making a very bad decision at that age, but he's still a child. And yeah, we have to look at the way guns are a big part of culture. And it is a big part of urban African-American culture and a very big part of rural white culture. I live in Cordova, and almost everybody I know has a gun, you know, in some form or some form of fashion, whether it's just a handgun for self-protection or a bunch of hunting rifles. One of our neighbors over here, he loves hunting, and he counts down the days till deer season. He and his grandson go hunting for deer, and he will gladly, it won't be hard for him this year, miss an Auburn game so he could go out hunting with his grandson, you know? And that's just part of their, that's just a big part of his culture. He's a good old country boy, hunts and fishes.
Yeah.
Urban people, they see the glamorization in rap videos. They see the glamorization of The Wire and Power. What? And
I mean, just to push back just a little bit on that, just because, you know, I live and see this and experience it. A lot of it too is, and I was thinking about this as you were talking about the rural person, that it is embedded in the culture in the sense that you have to keep it to protect you because there is someone out there that's going to try to make you do something and is going to have a gun and protect yourself. So I think a lot of it is that it's can kind of be that same mentality. I mean, because I think if you simplify it as though they just want it because of a glorifying thing, then you kind of make it more of an, I don't know, more of a issues. I don't know. Not that it can be perceived that it's just because of their race or because they're in this area. And I think that's unfair because I think it's very similar to someone that's in a rural area that goes, oh, it'll take the police forever to get out here. I'm not going to wait 20 minutes for the police to get out there. I'm going to keep a gun under my bed. And, you know, that's going to be my protection. Well, white America is fine hearing that. But if they hear, if it's a, you know, an urban black teen, that's like, oh, this gang's down here trying to recruit me and they keep messing with me. And I need to protect myself because I heard from a friend of mine, they shot this one kid that said he wasn't going to do anything, you know, do this thing for them. And I don't want to be caught up like that kid. So I want to have this because if I have this, then maybe I'll run into someone who will leave me alone if they see that I have it. And to see that, like, to me is less acceptable by white America. That's the kind of thing, I guess, that bothers me.
I get you.
Is that white America, again, not all the time, is able to give the benefit of the doubt to the rural white person, but not the black urbanite.
And I get you there. You're right. That is not understanding urban black culture. Cause again, I've mainly spent my life in the suburbs and most of the black people I've known,
you know, more about rural than I do.
Yeah. I mean, most of the black people I've known have been through school and at Vestavia Hills High School and at the University of Alabama. So it's not like, yeah, I'm seeing what you're seeing in Brooklyn every day. I mean, Brooklyn Start, plug, it deals with some of that stuff and the culture clashes of an Alabama couple moving to Brooklyn. So, I think there is some need for understanding for both parts. And again, this goes back to you and I had that conversation about, we're more similar than we are different. But we just don't understand our similarities until we start talking, you know, because black family culture is very, very tight knit. Rural family culture, rural white culture, very, very family tight knit. There's a lot more similarities than people want to admit.
There's similarity with a Jamaican American family in Brooklyn with a white rural family than there would be a white suburbs
Yeah.
A couple. Absolutely.
100%. Absolutely. Because they're, my wife and I were talking about this. What do you see people complaining about? The welfare queens driving Escalades with their iPhone 16s. And yeah, I was like, yeah. What do you see in the world? You have these dudes on these massively jacked up trucks with the latest Carhartt gear and the latest Remington shotguns. It's basically the same. Like, why are you wasting your money on showy, flashy stuff instead of doing it something that could benefit you? It's very much the same thing. Very much the same thing. Getting back to another issue, we said earlier, 60% of all suicides are via handgun. So most suicides with handgun are fatal. There are some attempted suicides, like the guy who was the Air Force general on Malcolm in the Middle, had bad diabetes, tried to shoot himself in the head, but he put it in his temple and it shot his eyes out. It didn't kill him. It blinded him. There are a lot of maimings and injuries from suicide attempts that are unsuccessful. Would we see as many suicide attempts with a limit on handguns? I'm going to say no. And I think that that's something that's really not talked about as much when we look at gun deaths, is the suicides by gunshot handguns. I'm not saying that if we banned all handguns that the suicide rate would go down, but I think if we didn't have the immediate availability of a handgun, that some of these people, when they're at their very low points, don't have that ease to just grab the gun and killing themselves, they may be able to get the help they need. And I think,
that's going to require a crossover with gun regulation and breaking down HIPAA. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of the problem right now, is because you're able to get around a lot of this stuff is with HIPAA rules. You know, you can't divulge this information.
Well, I know there's some concerns. Like I've said before, I'm a schizophrenic. I know some of the talks were like schizophrenic people and depressed people shouldn't be able to own guns. Like, they should turn them in if they are diagnosed that way. And I'm just like, no, as long as I take my meds, I am fine. I'm a fully functional individual as long as I take my meds every night. If I don't take my meds, that's when I start to hear the voices again, and that's problematic. But there are people that are fully functional schizophrenics who...
Yeah, but can I ask a personal question?
Mm-hmm.
Your voices that you hear, do they talk to you and tell you to do things?
Yes.
Or, okay, they tell you to do things.
You have to be like, they told me to hurt. They told me to hurt others and then kill myself. So that was my big, big incident, that I finally gave into the voices and thinking that it was normal that everyone had people talking to them when there was no one else around. And I thought that was everyone's normal. And then I start on the meds and they go away like, whoa. So this is what it's like being alone with your thoughts. So,
So you would say, someone like you in your situation, because you got the help, because you got the treatment, you should be allowed now to get a gun.
If I wanted to, yes.
If
I chose to.
And do you think there's been like some amount of time in saying that maybe you shouldn't have had access to one?
Yeah, I can see that. Especially after the suicide attempt. I can definitely... understand.
And that's what I'm saying.
No. That's what I mean, there needs to be a waiting period. I totally agree with you. There needs to be a waiting period. Will they get to a point where we can all agree what the waiting period is? Probably not. Everyone will have their own idea of what a waiting period should be. But I think we need to attempt some of this. And again, this goes back to one of you and I's favorite things. If we just had a better functioning healthcare system, we would be able to identify a lot of this depression and mental illness before it spirals out of control. And
I'm just saying, and again, in transparency and being all honesty, I mean, like, there were times that I was stuck in a really bad depression where I, you know, would think like, God, it would be easier if it was over, because then I wouldn't feel this, or I wouldn't have to feel like it. For me, it never actually got to a point where I was looking for something or trying to find a weapon or trying to find something. But there was just that, I think that thing that everyone kind of has at some point, where they kind of go, if I wasn't existing, things would be so much easier.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pretty general saying that happens through everyone's mind at some point, if they're honest with themselves, even at their lowest point, even if it's not a clinical depression or clinical anxiety or clinical, you know, if it's schizophrenia or something like that. I just think like I look at to my case, I'm like, yeah, it's probably good that I didn't have anything around. I mean, I don't think I would have done anything, but better safe than sorry, you know?
No, I understand. And again, you can't regulate everything and go through every scenario knowing what's going to happen. There will always be wild cards. There's always, was it exception to every rule? There's always an exception to every rule. So I think that it'll be a process, but we have to get this, we have to start talking and get the process going. And I think that's part of the biggest problem we have right now is we're so far apart. We don't even want to talk.
No, I agree. And again, like I said, and hate to tie this all the way back, my hope is in that November is that we will start. Like I said, if I was forecasting and wanted to see, obviously I want Harris to win. I want Trump to go away completely. 100%. I want Trumpism to die. I want the last decade to slowly, slowly just peel off, you know, the ring has been thrown into Mount Doom. Ceron's being ripped down. You know, that's what I want. Like take the vice president debate the other night, you know, watching that, I was bored out of my mind. And I was like, thank you. This is what I want to see on television. I want to see a boring debate with two guys that show some respect and maybe a little less lying from JD Vance, but,
he's just, you know, a knucklehead.
I get it. I know. I get it. I know what he's doing. He's hitching to this. He doesn't think Trump's going to win and he's trying to set himself up for later. I get it. He's being an opportunist, whatever. You're a politician. That's what politicians do. But I mean, again, like I said, I think we get to that point when Trumpism dies.
And it is something we're going to have to do. We're going to have to realize that we are going to have to work with each other. We are going to have to.
But that's what I'm saying. We cannot do it with an extreme on one side and, you know, someone playing moderate on the other. You know, that's it's like when, you know, everyone was trying to claim that like Obama was left wing. I was like, no, this dude's a moderate. He's one of the most moderate presidents we've had. And again, it's just all this rhetoric. And like I said, I don't think we can get back to, I don't think we will have serious conversations about stuff like this, about healthcare, about gun control, about the things that Americans really care about. We don't get back to this because I feel like in the age of Trumpism, now it's turned to everyone's got to get control of a system because the only way that we're going to do this is getting rid of this democracy crap and this voting. And just making someone do something. How we've seen, you know, Republicans, you know, the GOP shift from their strategy being like, we're getting control of the courts. We get to control the courts. We get everything that we want.
No.
There's going to be a fight over. Now we're going to see a fight over the courts. We're going to add more justices. How are we going to do this? And it's just like, as long as that keeps happening. Yeah, I agree. We're not going to get there. We're not going to get back to this place. But I really feel like America can get there if we can just get rid of Trump.
The problem is he's not going to go away. We're just going to have more people like Mitt Romney, Dick Cheney say and do things to.
I hate that Dick Cheney's the voice of reason. Like, you don't understand. Like, just
Dick and Liz Cheney are about to endorse Kamala. I think this week they're going to have something. We live
in, like, one of the greatest war criminals in the United States is backing Harris, and everyone's like, all right, I always liked that Dick Cheney guy. I guess it's just because
enemies make strange bedfellows, my friend. Common enemies make strange bedfellows.
Well, you know what's so weird too is I've been binge watching Game of Thrones because I never watched it. I never got into Game of Thrones. I was a total dead the Walking Dead guy. You know, when they were kind of like competing there for a little while, and I was like, whatever, I'll get Game of Thrones later. And then, you know, I'm going back through it and I'm binge watching it right now. I was like, okay, basically the theme of the show is everyone's a piece of crap. Everyone will eventually be a piece of crap. So just be prepared for that. That's literally the main idea of the entire series is everyone sucks and will let you down. And again, like I said, it's that mentality that that cynical mentality of like, everyone's just going to let you down. You say like, we got to have more of the Cheneys, or we got to have more of those people staying out. To me, it's just like, we're getting that age. We're old enough. We're seeing like stuff cycle around. Like the people that were the villains when we were younger are now coming back for a new generation, becoming the heroes for other people. Like the, what is it? The Menendez brothers or whatever. Yeah. Remember that? Like when we were growing up, we were
just, oh, that God, trial.
And now it's like, everyone's like, oh, they're heroes. Let them freedom, you know? And I'm just like, that's why it feels like Game of Thrones is we've lived long enough to see it come back around, and everything's flip-flop. The heroes are the villains are the heroes. And I don't know who's a good person.
Well, I remember Donald Trump was beloved. He was in Home Alone 2 and all this stuff, all these movies. And now they're just like,
It was a fun caricature. It was like, yeah, he's a rich, the whole thing is like, yeah, the dude's a rich prick who likes to be rich, who's completely infatuated with himself, but he's not harming us. You know, he's harming people in New York, but he ain't harming us. And all of a sudden, New York's like, hey, you see why we hate him so much up here?
There you go. All right. Well, let's wrap things up. I know we got to get going. Where can they find more information about Brooklyn Start?
Yeah, Brooklyn Start. So we are, I sent you a rough draft of what we're doing. We're the other day, we're very close to getting this down. We're having some production conversations about, do we want it to look a little bit more like a trailer or a little bit more like a mini episode, depending on how we're going to market it.
Can I vote for the mini episode that I got to watch? Cause I really enjoyed that.
Yes. We've gotten more votes for running it like a mini episode than an actual trailer. So yeah, what we're doing right now is we're going back and I got a buddy scoring it. Again, if you want to see that actual trailer, you can follow me on TikTok at Brandon Triola. We also have a specific Brooklyn Start page where we're going to release the trailer. It's at Watch Brooklyn Start. And then all that's the same for Instagram, hashtag Watch Brooklyn Start. And then you can find me at Triola Man on Instagram. And like I said, we're pretty close. So hopefully this trailer is going to be done in the next week and a half. And then we're going to have a nice little release party for it.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter, X at David Sears 75, Instagram at David Sears 1982, on Threads at David Sears 1982. Next week, we'll probably have another conversation that nobody wants to have about a different topic that is a difficult one.
Should we talk about I'm game for it. I mean, you and I have kind of talked a little bit on the episodes about our schizophrenia, or your schizophrenia and my depression.
Yeah. Let's talk mental illness. Nobody wants to talk about mental illness. Yeah.
Let's open it up. The mental illness of Republicans and Democrats.
I mean, it would be that's definitely an issue that a lot of people, I mean, no one would expect that I'm a schizophrenic. No one would expect
suspect that I'm an artist that suffers from depression and anxiety.
Do you normally smoke
artists
weed?
Don't deal with that type of thing.
Do you smoke weed? Watch the Brooklyn Start trailer. There's a funny bit about that in there. Brandon, it has been fun as usual. Forward to next week. Mental illness. I'll do some more research for it.
Yeah, let's have some fun.
All right, thank you. This has been Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have on the Tony Curry Radio Network.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.